ever imagined coming back to the future? Or finding yourself lost and at home all at once? This was our hero's experience, and this is his tale. Once upon a time, long ago, early explorers came upon a great river valley. More than beautiful, it was magical and enchanted all who settled there. The Hudson, they called it, after the man hailed as its discoverer. Here, there were any number of quaint villages, and in one of these, there lived a simple, good-natured fellow named Rip Van Winkle. Always ready to amuse the village children with his stories, Rip would have happily just whistled his whole life away. In fact, he preferred whistling, or any diversion, to hard work. This, then, was Rip's character flaw. On the other hand, Rip's wife was a sour woman and a tyrant. Dame Van Winkle nagged Rip constantly about his idleness, his carelessness, and the ruin he was bringing on his family. Rip, why are you so lazy? Rip, our children need new shoes. Rip, you're the worst husband in the colonies. Morning, noon, and night, her tongue was incessantly going, and everything he said or did would result in a tirade of complaints. Rip's response would always be the same. He would shrug his shoulders, roll his eyes, and say nothing. This would infuriate his wife still more, so Rip would retreat to his own side of the house. The outside. Rip's loyal companion in idleness was his dog, Wolf. As courageous an animal as ever explored the woods. But what courage can face the terrors of a nagging tongue? Wolf! Must you lie idle all day? Wolf, you're good for nothing, hound! Wolf would watch nervously for the dame whenever he was in the house. And would scurry away, hiding under the bed or wherever he could, if the dame seemed even a little touchy. Which was just about all the time. Poor Wolf. And poor Rip. Times grew worse and worse for Rip Van Winkle as years of marriage rolled on. A sharp tongue is the only edge tool that grows ever more cutting with constant use. Almost to despair. To escape the farm's hard work and the dame's harsh voice, All he could do was take his gun and walk into the woods. There, seating himself at the foot of a tree, Rip would share his lunch and his troubles with Wolf. Taking such a walk one autumnal day, Rip and Wolf found themselves high in the Catskill Mountains, enjoying their favorite sport, squirrel hunting. The stillness of the hills echoed with the shots of Rip's gun. Out of breath and tired, Rip threw himself late in the afternoon on a grassy hilltop. Through an opening between the trees, he could see many a mile of the lower countryside. He saw at a distance the lordly Hudson, far, far below, moving on its silent but majestic course, and at last losing itself in the blue highlands. On the other side, he looked into a deep mountain glen, wild and lonely. Rip lay musing on this scene. Evening was gradually advancing. The mountains began to throw shadows over the valleys. He saw that it would be dark long before he could return to the village. He trembled at the thought of encountering the terrors of Dame Van Winkle. Just as he started to head home, he heard a voice calling his name. See nothing. Wolf bristled and growled. Rip felt uneasy and peered down into the glen and saw a strange figure struggling up the rocks with something heavy on his back. As he drew nearer, the man appeared even more peculiar to Rip. He was a short, square-built old fellow with a grizzled beard and was dressed just like the Dutch explorers of long ago. On his shoulder was a hefty liquor keg. And he signaled to Rip to come closer and assist him. Rip agreed, and they helped each other get the load up a steep and narrow gully. As they ascended, Rip every now and then heard the sound of distant thunder, but the skies were clear. Curiously, the rumble seemed to come from the deep ravine toward which they were heading.
Why are we carrying an enormous keg up this wild mountain?
Rip wondered to himself. But he was too polite and much too afraid to ask. So they continued, Rip and his new companion, laboring on in silence. Before long, they arrived at a high meadow, revealing new objects of wonder. In the center was a group of odd-looking men playing at ninepins, an old-time form of bowling. Their beards were peculiar, their clothes. outlandish. And the man who seemed to be in charge was a stocky, weather-beaten old gentleman with the fanciest clothes. They seemed to rip like figures in an old Dutch painting. Rip was bewildered. Though the men appeared to be at play, yet they looked so solemn. It was the most melancholy amusement he had ever seen. The noise of the balls, rolling and striking the pins, echoed like thunder throughout the mountain. When the bowlers saw the two men approaching with the liquor, they stopped their game at once. For a long moment, they stood like grim statues and glared at Rip, with looks so icy that his heart felt chilled and his knees knocked together. His companion now poured from the kegs into large steins and had Rip serve the men. Trembling and frightened, Rip obeyed. The crew drank in profound silence and then returned to their game. When Rip saw them turn away, he began to relax a bit. He even dared to sneak a taste of their brew, which he liked as much
as the best Dutch beer.
Being a thirsty sort, Rip was tempted to drink
a little more. And a bit more. And more. And more.
Until his eyes swam in their sockets, his head drooped on his chest, and he fell into a deep sleep. His eyes. It was a bright, sunny morning.
Surely,
thought Rip,
I have not slept here all night.
Where was Wolf? No bark answered Rip's whistles. And whose rusty old gun could this be? Feeling stiff and sore, Rip stood with difficulty. Where the dry gully had been, he saw instead a rushing mountain stream. The morning, likewise, was rushing away, and Rip felt famished, as if he hadn't eaten in days. It pained Rip to think of going home without Wolf. He dreaded the scolding sure to come from his wife. But it would not do to starve alone in the mountains. With a heavy heart, Rip turned his steps homeward. Approaching his village, Rip encountered a number of people, but didn't recognize any. This surprised him, since he thought that he knew everyone living thereabouts. Their clothing, too, was unfamiliar. They all stared at Rip, however, as if he looked strange. Many stroked their chins. Following their example, Rip put his hand to his own chin and found his beard had grown overnight to be a foot long. Now Rip entered the outskirts of the village. A ragtag troop had formed at his heels. Boys, girls, and dogs, all hooting and barking at him and pointing at his long gray beard. The village itself looked very different, larger and more crowded. There were rows of houses Rip had never before seen, while the homes of his friends were gone. There were strange names over the doors and strange faces in the windows. Everything was strange. Rip's mind now doubted itself.
Could I and all the world have been bewitched?
He wondered.
But surely this is my native village. There rise the Catskill Mountains. There, in the distance, flows the Silver Hudson. And there are all the hills and dales, precisely as I left them only yesterday.
Rip was utterly bewildered.
I had too much of that wicked beer last night,
he thought.
It's completely muddled my poor head.
With difficulty, he found his way to his own house. He was filled with anxiety, expecting at any moment to hear the shrill voice of Dame Van Winkle. He found the house a wreck. The roof had fallen in, the window shattered, and
the doors off their hinges.
He entered the house. It was empty, forlorn, and apparently abandoned. Rip couldn't bear to be alone amid such desolation. He called loudly for his
wife and children.
The lonely rooms rang with his own voice.
And then again, all was silent.
He hurried off to find his longtime friends who used to lounge in front of the village inn. But it was gone. Standing in its place was a large building that called itself the Union Hotel. As usual, a crowd was gathered, but there was no one Rip remembered. The outlook of the people seemed different. Where Rip recalled the old schoolmaster droning on about nothing in particular, now there was someone speaking energetically about elections and other unfamiliar things. Where a majestic tree had sheltered the little colonial inn, now there fluttered at the top of a tall pole a flag with an unfamiliar pattern of stars and stripes. So much was strange and incomprehensible. Still, there was the old sign with King George's picture, but why had a cocked hat replaced his crown? Why had a sword replaced his scepter? And why had the king's name been replaced by this new one, General Washington? Having come to a political discussion with an ancient musket and with an army of women and children at his heels, Rip soon attracted attention. The politicians crowded around him, suspiciously, and peppered him with questions.
"Are you a Federalist or a Democrat?" asked one. "Have you come here to start a riot?" asked another.
Rip was flummoxed and flustered.
"Alas!"
he cried.
"I am a poor, quiet man and a loyal subject of the king."
The crowd erupted in horror. "A Tory! A Tory! A spy! Arrest him!" Rip assured them that he meant no harm, but had merely come in search of old friends.
"Well then, who are they? Name them."
"Where's Nicholas Vedder?"
asked Rip.
"Why, he died 18 years ago," came the reply.
"Brom Dutcher?"
"Oh, he never came back from the war."
"What about Van Bummel, the schoolmaster?"
"He was a great militia general and now sits in the Congress."
Hearing of these sad changes in his home and his friends, and finding himself so alone in the world, Rip felt heartsick.
"Does nobody here know Rip Van Winkle?"
he cried out in despair.
"Of course," two or three answered. "He's leaning against that tree."
Rip looked and beheld a younger version of himself,
as bedraggled and indolent as he had always been.
Rip was now at his wit's end. He could understand none of this and was hardly able to speak. The crowd, however, was impatient.
"Who are you?" they demanded.
"God knows. I'm not myself. I'm somebody else. That's me yonder. No. That's somebody else who got into my shoes. I was myself last night, but fell asleep in the mountain and everything's changed. And I'm changed. And I can't tell what's my name or who I am.
The crowd started rolling their eyes. Some whispered that Rit's gun should be taken away. At this critical moment, an attractive young woman made her way through the crowd. In her arms, she held a chubby infant who was frightened and began to cry.
"Hush, Rip," said the woman. "The old man won't hurt you."
The child's name, its mother's bearing, and especially her voice, all awakened a rush of memories for Rip.
"What is your name, young lady?"
he asked.
"Judith Gardner, sir." "And your father's name?" "Ah, poor man. Rip Van Winkle was his name, but it's 20 years since he went away from home with his gun and has never been heard of since. His dog came home without him. But whether he shot himself or was carried away by the Indians, nobody can tell. I was just then a little girl."
Rip had only one more question, which he trembled to ask.
"Where's your mother?"
"Oh, she too has died, poor woman. She was berating a Connecticut peddler and in her fury burst a blood vessel."
Rip pitied the poor peddler. Unable to contain himself any longer, he swept his daughter and his grandson into his arms.
"I am your father,"
he exclaimed.
"Young Rip Van Winkle once, old Rip Van Winkle now. Does no one remember me?"
They all stood amazed until an old woman, tottering out from the crowd, studied his face and cried out,
"Sure enough, it is Rip Van Winkle. It is himself. Welcome home again, old neighbor. Why, where have you been these 20 long years?"
Rip's story was soon told, for the whole 20 years had been to him just a single night. Villagers listened to Rip, but before long started shaking their heads in disbelief. When they saw old Peter Vanderdonk slowly approaching, they decided to ask his opinion. He was the oldest resident of the village and knew its history better than anyone. He remembered Rip at once and fully corroborated his story. Mr. Vanderdonk reminded everyone that strange events had always been reported in the Catskill Mountains. That the ghosts of the old explorer Henry Hudson and his Dutch crew were known to return every 20 years, and that his own father had once seen them at their games. And so, he congratulated Rip upon his remarkable adventure and proposed that everyone join in cheering his return. I would also like a little bit of help from this audience. Rip, rip, hooray! Rip, rip, hooray! Rip, rip, hooray! Hooray, hooray! And Before long, the crowd wearied of Rip and turned once again to political concerns. Rip's daughter took him home to live with her. She had a comfortable house and a well-fed husband. Rip now resumed his old walks and habits and was revered as a chronicler of the old times.
Before the war,
Rip would tell his story to every new guest at the hotel. At first, the story's details varied, but in time, they settled into a tale that the whole town learned by heart, just as I've told it to you. Some were always skeptical of Rip, and insisted he had been out of his mind. The old Dutch villagers, however, believed it without exception. For generations to come, no one would hear thunder in the mountains without saying that Henry Hudson's crew were once again playing at ninepins high in the Catskills. And it was a common wish of all married folk in the neighborhood, whenever domestic life seemed most unbearable, that they might enjoy just a sip of Rip Van Winkle's legendary potion.